With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to the third DesignFootball.com podcast, a special Christmas edition. To what extent that actually becomes the case, we'll see in due course. I'm Jay, DesignFootball.com resident blogger, and I proposed this podcast partly as an excuse to chat to like-minded people who I thought sang from a similar hymn sheet to me, all in an atmosphere of general bonhomie. Hello, Dennis Hurley.
Hello, Jay. Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas to you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. I'm looking forward to eating some turkey later.
Well, yes, it really, really is Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Dennis is a respected sports journalist, the curator of the Museum of Jerseys network, and that includes CorkCityKits.com, PrideInTheJersey.com, and InternationalRugbyShirts.com. Is that all correct, Dennis?
That's all correct, yeah.
That's all correct. Wonderful network of websites. Everyone should visit those.
Thank you very much.
Something else you've contributed enormously to, which many people would describe as previously a void on the internet, is the squad numbers blog. So a blog on squad numbers. As well as this, you've also written reams on the concept of kit clashes, mainly on the True Colours footballkits.com website.
Yeah.
So, Dennis, what constitutes a clash?
It's funny you should ask me that direct question. As part of my research for this podcast, I decided to read back on the piece I wrote under the same title on John Devlin's True Colours website just over 3 years ago. I was surprised to learn. And basically, I suppose it comes down to what extent one is confused by the two teams. Watching them in a game, I suppose, rather than watching two kits side by side, or looking at them rather than watching them. Because football is about movement and a lot of players on the pitch, and that's the proper test of whether a clash occurs. I suppose an example of that would be when Arsenal played Sparta Prague in the Champions League in 2000, and Arsenal wore their navy third kit at home, and Sparta were in their very, very dark red. And to look at the two strips, you'd think it would be okay. But in the game itself, there was a fierce problem with contrast, so much so that Arsenal changed to their yellow away kits at half-time. Obviously, if Liverpool against Manchester United is obviously a clash because they both have primarily red shirts. And then Liverpool versus Everton is obviously not a clash because one is blue and one is red. So you're going from those two extremes to somewhere in the middle and basically finding the tipping point as to at what stage confusion would arise. I'm not sure if that sounds like a load of rubbish now or what.
No, that sounds good. The immediate problem that is being screamed out to me there is that when things are decided, let's say in midweek, kits that teams want to wear are submitted to the referee. He doesn't see them in movement. He doesn't see the two teams together. He sees them drawn on a piece of paper or some sort of depiction on a piece of paper, I would guess.
Paper clashes rather than actual clashes.
Paper clashes on paper. Okay,
yeah.
So this is a problem in football.
It seems to be, because we're noticing examples of what you've described, and you wonder how much effort actually does go into determining the kits to be worn. And it's, I suppose, we see it because we're complete nerds, but the people actually making decisions mightn't be as into kits as the proper kit aficionados, and so they only give it a cursory amount of attention rather than properly evaluating the extent of a clash. I remember in the 2007 Rugby World Cup, Scotland and New Zealand played each other, and it's another great example of when you think kits wouldn't clash and actually do. Scotland wore their navy home strip, and New Zealand had to change away from all black into a grey kit with a lot of black on the side panels, and Scotland had a lot of grey on the side panels of their shirts. And obviously rugby is a very, when you're watching it, it's very side on, because one team is on one side, one team's at the other, and they're going up against each other, and it caused a lot of problems. And then New Zealand hammered Scotland in that game, and they went on to play France in the quarterfinals in Cardiff. And France that year had a very dark kit, apparently created just to antagonise New Zealand and force them to change if they met. But the IRB, after the problems with the Scotland game, they felt that they had to actually get a bunch of students from Cardiff to go on to the Millennium Stadium pitch in the various combinations of kit to see how they would work against each other. And what ended up happening was that France wore their away white shorts and socks with their navy jerseys against New Zealand's grey shorts and black socks.
Ah, okay. And that in theory, even with everything that we know, and we talk about the overall clash, which you'll expand upon in a second, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That in my mind, that does seem like a combination that would work, because there is enough contrast in the whole kit that New Zealand were wearing there compared with what France were wearing, that the two dark shirts don't necessarily cause as much of a problem as they might have done previous.
Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of it's counterintuitive in a way, I suppose, that what you think wouldn't work actually does, and what you think does work doesn't. But they had to go to the trouble of basically having a match first to see. And I suppose that's probably not really feasible in the Premier League to do that every week on a Tuesday or a Wednesday to try out all the various combinations.
Completely feasible, surely. If they could do it in rugby, where there's far less money, then I'm sure it's...
well, it was the Rugby World Cup.
Still more money in football. Still more money in Stoke against Hull in the Premier League than there is in any match in the World Cup. Would you not agree?
I think there is. There's probably an element of truth to that.
Okay. Yeah. Now, but how many minutes in before our first argument? We've done okay.
8:55. Yeah.
That's not bad going.
That's okay.
Could you...
I thought you were going to introduce me by mentioning all our arguments.
Oh no! Well, no, that would have set the wrong time.
I had a great line ready. That it was like they were like there's an episode of Frasier where he's negotiating with the station manager about pay rises and things like that for the staff who aren't on air, basically, and he becomes, you know, their hero, their Arthur Scargill, and he's having these arguments with the station manager, who's a female, I should have said at the start, and they're shouting insults at each other, and the insults get worse and worse, and eventually they just, you know, passionately embrace. And I think that's how it's going to go for us too.
I really, really hope so. I wish we'd done this in person now.
Yeah. I think my wife would probably be in favour.
Well, I wouldn't guarantee that. Something you are famous for, I think, maybe in certain circles, is
infamous, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe, is this concept of the overall clash versus the clash on paper versus the overall clash. Can you just explain how that works?
Well, it basically involves, I suppose, it's like FIFA at the World Cup, but not as heavy-handed. It's you're looking at a kit as one complete thing rather than three different constituent things, i.e. the shirts, shorts and socks. So I think the example I gave in that article was Everton and Leeds, who obviously don't play each other anymore, but they used to. And I do recall a couple of times Leeds going to Goodison Park and wearing blue shorts to avoid the shorts clash. So they were in white, blue, white against Everton's blue, white, blue, when all logic would suggest that Everton should be the ones to change shorts, creating all blue against all white. And just removing any confusion, even and we're seeing it a bit nowadays with the lack of policing of shorts clashes in the Premier League. Leeds in all white against Everton in blue, white, blue, and having a shorts clash, I think, is preferable to both teams having the same colours just in different configurations.
But the issue with that, and I think you said Goodison Park, would be a home team having to change an element of their kit.
Yeah,
that,
I know.
It's never
going to happen. Yeah.
It's not going to happen, but yeah, it is something that
I suppose it could actually happen if the referee was strict enough to force it, because that is laid down in the rules. You remember Aston Villa against West Ham a few years ago, and West Ham had an all sky blue away kit at Villa Park, and the referee didn't think it was sufficient to solve the clash. And it was an example of an overall clash, because obviously Villa had their normal claret shirts with blue sleeves, and the referee made Villa change to white, although some people would consider white against sky blue a clash as well, but that's a different kettle of fish.
So who Aston Villa changed their shorts or changed their whole kit?
They changed to white shirts.
White shirts, jerseys. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, two people divided by a common language.
Maybe neither of us can speak our own. It's fascinating for me. I'm not sure how fascinating it is to others. Yeah. Well, that's good. At least we're satisfied by it. The overall clash phenomena is so it's controversial. Obviously, we talked about the World Cup, where teams were not allowed to wear their standard colours anymore. They were told to wear one colour. So you had, just to list a few, Italy, Germany, Spain, all wearing one colour kits.
Yeah.
I think that was awful,
wasn't it?
Well, I'm not. I agree with it to avoid the clash. So I agree with the thinking behind it.
Oh, to avoid a clash, but you still apply a bit of logic and fairness to it. You don't just tell Germany, we know you like wearing black shorts and white socks, but you're going to wear all white in every game, no matter who you're playing. I was even very pleasantly surprised in the semi-final of the World Cup when the Netherlands played Argentina, and for some reason Argentina were actually allowed to wear black shorts. They wear black socks as well, which obviously isn't their perfect kit, but it was a lot better than seeing them in white shorts and socks that they had been for the rest of the World Cup.
Yeah. I agree with it, as long as one team could wear... So I agree with the change. I don't agree with Germany's kit becoming all white, but I do agree with... If it's going to cause a problem, and I do think too many colours does cause a problem. And there have been these studies into this where they've demonstrated that if a team is wearing one colour of the opposition, then it causes a problem. So I do.
Oh, and I've seen that study. I think I might have given you the link to it. or they'll be both fine there at the same time. Would, did John Devlin have it first, maybe? But yeah, I agree. And that study said that the worst clash possible, overall clash, I don't think it used the phrase overall clash, but it said that red shirts and blue shorts against blue shirts and red shorts is the worst of that kind, which makes sense if you think about it. Like, I recall in 1998, Brazil against Chile. Fuck, I'll just say Chile because I'm not a Latin American. That they obviously both had blue shorts and white socks. And I think Brazil changed both elements. So Brazil were yellow, white, blue against Chile's red, blue, white, which is an awful mishmash. And surely it would have just made a lot more sense for Brazil to be yellow, blue, blue, and Chile to be red, white, white.
Yeah.
That one team would change their shorts and the other team would change their socks.
Yeah.
But it just clearly, it was that Chile were the home team for that game, so Brazil had changed both, which is nonsensical. An example of common sense being applied, Chelsea and Luton in the 1994 FA Cup semi-final, where they both had blue shorts and white socks, and Chelsea were all blue and Luton were all white.
The individual elements clash with each other. The most fascinating thing for me on this is the idea that you can have a better distinction between two teams if teams who are wearing different coloured shorts actually change so they're wearing the same shorts, the same coloured shorts.
Yeah.
That will sound perverse, but it is actually correct, as the study would probably demonstrate.
Exactly, yeah. Italy and the USA at the 2006 World Cup. Italy, their official kit that time was their normal blue, white, blue. I think in nearly every game they ended up wearing all blue, including against the USA, who were white jerseys, navy shorts, white socks. So technically Italy were changing from white shorts to blue shorts against a team in blue shorts. But it helped the differentiation, because then when you're watching it, you know that there's only one team with white in their kit, and that's the USA. So it's why I think you know, you can get away with a team in stripes playing a team whose shirt is the colour of one of the stripe colours. Let's say Newcastle against Leeds, because you're watching it and you know that one team is all white and the other team has a lot of black, so it's easy to know which is which.
The time when this is particularly important and where you can get away with something like that, the something you run the prideinthejersey.com website,
yeah,
which focuses on Gaelic Athletic Association.
Yeah.
Okay, Gaelic Athletic Association, GAA, kits, so that's hurling and football. And those kits, firstly, they're virtually all made by O'Neill's, and we could talk about why that's not always the case, but they are mostly made by O'Neill's, and they are mostly sublimated, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, so there are horrendous clashes, and people should follow Dennis on Twitter just to see some of the absolutely horrendous clashes. And we're not talking about overall clash versus clash on paper.
No, we're just talking about teams in completely indistinguishable kits.
Yeah, they're essentially wearing the same kit, and to an extent that it might even be the same template, as they're all made by O'Neill's, or very, very similar templates. Is that
fair? Yeah.
So I'd say incredible, really. A white jersey with like a blue band, and both teams are wearing that exact kit. But
I think if it was that bad, they probably would. Like, they do police outright clashes where the two teams have exactly the same. But anything short of that is kind of up for negotiation, I suppose.
So say if a team had a white jersey with a blue band, and the other team had a white jersey with blue sleeves, that would slip through, wouldn't it?
Oh, hard to know. It would depend on the referee, I presume, and if it had been spotted by the committee organising the game. What you'd often see is a team with a white jersey with a blue band against a team with a white jersey with a red band, both mainly white, but the feeling would be that there's enough to differentiate them.
That's sorry. What I'm saying is it could slip through.
Oh, it could, yeah. Like in football, association football, the focus generally is on reducing any element of a clash. But in GAA, it seems to be that you'll only change if it's completely unavoidable.
But some of the ones you've shown, it slipped through, obviously, because both teams have only brought one set of kit, I would have thought.
Yeah.
And they've had to think, well, okay, we've got this is the best opportunity to play this game, so we've got to go ahead and play it. But some of them are terrible, really, really terrible. But this is this is completely in contrast to something that the GAA is an absolute pioneer in. And this is, I think it happens in club finals, or it has happened in club finals, where they tweak the kit slightly so both teams can wear something.
Yeah, it doesn't happen a huge amount, but it's pleasing to someone like me when it does happen. There was an All-Ireland club final, just for people who might be familiar with it. Generally, the counties are the big thing, but every player plays for their local club as well. And each county has a club championship, and the winners of all the club championships progress to the All-Ireland club championship, as opposed to the proper All-Ireland championship where counties play. And in the All-Ireland club final in 2013, there was the Dublin champions, Ballymun, were playing St. Bridget's from Roscommon, and Ballymun have red jerseys with a green hoop, green shorts. The socks don't really matter because most players wear their socks around their ankles. So much so that there's companies now just producing just basically socks that go just up to the ankles in club colours. And St. Bridget's were green jerseys with a good bit of red trim, white shorts. And initially the GAA said that the teams would have to wear their county colours, because there was a clash, which it was actually surprising that they'd agreed that there was a clash, because far worse has been allowed to go ahead with both in their normal kits. And I think Ballymun then offered to actually wear white jerseys, which was agreeable. But then they went away and thought about it more, and they said, what if we wear red shorts and have a narrower green hoop? And that was... That it would work perfectly, because the amount of green was drastically reduced, and the overall clash was non-existent. Whereas with the larger green hoop and the green shorts, and those two colours going up against each other, would have been a real eyesore. And I think it would have been horrendous for colourblind people, because I think red and green are the colours that they confused with.
Yeah, most difficult to distinguish, yeah. I think, yeah.
Just kind of on that, there was an American football game a few weeks ago. The Buffalo Bills, I think, against the New York Jets. And they were playing on a Thursday night, and the NFL are doing this stupid thing that they call the color rush. It's basically, on the Thursday night games, they have teams playing each other in their traditional colours, whereas normally in most American sports, one team wears a light coloured jersey, like the World Cup, I suppose. Mm. But for the colour rush, they're not even their normal jerseys, so teams are wearing generally the same colour pants as their jerseys and the same helmets, so they just look like Power Rangers, basically. and the New York Jets are green, and the Buffalo Bills are normally blue and white, but red is their third colour, and they wore an all-red uniform for that game. And so it was all green against all red, and they both had white helmets, and colorblind people just could not distinguish at all.
Is this something that has, I'd imagine this has come up on, what's the website? Is it UniWatch or something?
Exactly, yeah. That's where I go for my fix. So yeah. I'm actually just sending you the link to that there.
Okay. And,
we're multimedia here at the Design Football Podcast.
Yeah, we'll pop that on there. And the... So this... again, you're going to say the same thing, that this isn't something... The idea of changing the jersey just for a final and making a hoop narrower and changing a detail of the jersey, that's something that you could come out in football and say, well, that's not something that's going to be practicable on a weekly basis or even on occasion. You've got your kit and this is the kit you wear for the season.
Yeah.
And you're not going to change it. But again, if it can happen in GAA, which essentially is still amateur.
Yeah.
Then you would say it could happen in football, and you wouldn't want it to happen every week. You don't want a team changing what the makeup of their kit, the makeup of their, say, their first choice kit every week. But we have a competition on the website on Design Football, and it was to say in a cup final, the ideal scenario is both teams to wear their home kit, and could you amend,
or as close as possible,
or as close to it as possible? Could you amend?
It was a great idea for a competition.
Yeah, I think I can't. And the bloke who came up with that idea must be a genius.
Yeah.
And
it was Jay, everybody.
Yeah. So I was right, and it worked out fantastically. So you had the main one for me was Liverpool against Sunderland in the 92 final.
Yeah.
And they're two sides that it's only at a push that one of them would have to change. Would you agree?
That's what I was saying earlier, kind of with the Newcastle Leeds example, that if you ramp up the white and tone down the red in Sunderland's kit, all red is not a problem against it. By the same token, if you made the Sunderland red stripes fatter and basically sort of just red with white pinstripes, they can play a team in all white, no problems.
Mm-hmm. So the issue in 92 with Liverpool and Sunderland was that Sunderland's kit was, I take it, was red and white stripes on the shirt, black shorts, and what colour socks?
They had red socks that season.
Red socks that season. But Liverpool that season had, it was the Adidas equipment season. So they had a red shirt, but with big white stripes on it. And
obnoxious white stripes, I describe them as.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. And then on the socks, there were big white tops on them as well. So there's a huge amount of white.
The two teams' socks were pretty much identical, actually. Sunderland had red socks with white tops that season. Just as a point of info.
Yeah, So there was a similarity that season. You can see why one of the teams had to change. And it was Sunderland who changed. But it could have been avoidable. Especially as Liverpool in that final wore a one-off shirt.
Yeah, as you like to...
I think we'll probably a one-off kit as well. I think the shorts probably changed as well because the material would have been different. But that's super geeky. But Liverpool did wear a one-off shirt, which was a cross between the 91-92 season shirt and the 92-93 season shirt.
Yeah.
So if they were going to do that, if they were going to wear a one-off shirt anyway, then they could have amended that certainly to allow there not to need to be a change of kit from anyone, and both teams could have worn their home
yeah colors. Your solution was just that the Adidas stripes would just be outlined in white, wasn't it?
It wasn't my solution. I think it was an entrant to the competition, but
sure? I thought you first floated this idea on a Football Attic RIP podcast in 2012. You should go back and listen to it. I think you did mention that.
Oh, did I? Maybe.
And then because you mentioned it, someone just basically decided to take that idea and just visualize it for you.
Are you suggesting that someone listened to that podcast? That's
I think you might
have
mentioned this in the introduction to the competition.
Okay, so they just read what I wrote as they were entering the competition,
and we're just trying to be teacher's pet.
That's an honor in itself. I'll take it however it comes. Okay, so that is kit clashes talked about in great detail. Probably not enough detail for you, though. Am I right?
Oh, well, there's never enough. Can I just say, that I just spotted a little bit of news, although it won't be news by the time this goes out. But Man City are going to wear all black at Arsenal on Monday night. I've just checked on the Arsenal website, because Arsenal do this thing. They do it for me, I'm convinced, that they, 4 or 5 days before a game, they put up what the two teams, the two goalkeepers and the referee will be wearing on their website, with terribly drawn illustrations, considering the resources at their disposal. But it's still nice. So Man City will be wearing all black on Monday. Because you're listening to this on Christmas Day, you know that they wore all black in their 4-0 defeat at the Emirates.
Yeah, I was very disappointed to see Manchester City wearing all black in their defeat of Arsenal the other night. Yeah.
Just also, like, obviously red and white against sky blue isn't a clash. Arsenal often do wear their away kit at Man City, but they wear their away kit at everyone, really. But in maybe 1988 or 89, Man City wore an all yellow kit at Highbury, and Arsenal won 4-0 like they did last Monday night. And the Peter Swales, the Man City chairman, actually burned the yellow kit and was never worn again.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, so I'm going to look into that.
Just to check, Arsenal against Newcastle on January 2nd, Peter Cech will be wearing pretty much the same colour as the referee. I'm not sure if that's of interest.
It's interesting.
He will be as well at Southampton on the 20th tomorrow.
Okay, that is of interest to me, certainly.
And just finally, I know I want to get away from the clashes, in that game tomorrow on the 26th, Southampton will have dark shorts, Southampton goalie will have dark shorts, Arsenal will have dark shorts, and the referee will have dark shorts. And all of those will also have dark socks, except for Southampton, who have red socks. So, surely Southampton goalie will have to change to white socks against Arsenal's dark socks. But that's just me being,
I would like to say, and this could just be food for thought, we're not going to discuss this, but this is the order in which kits should be chosen. The home outfield players should be able to choose their kit first, in effect. Then that should be followed by the away side outfield kit, so to make sure that doesn't clash with the home team. Then it should be the away goalkeeper. Then it should be the officials, and to make sure they don't clash with anything. And they really are secondary or tertiary to the whole process. So the officials should really be making sure that they don't clash with other people rather than the other way around. But then finally, the home goalkeeper should be changing dependent on whatever else has gone on, because that's the easiest scenario. He will have other goalkeeper shirts around and that kind of thing, rather than an away goalkeeper that they probably brought one set of kit for. But that's something that people can talk about. You can tweet us if you don't
like. The actual state of affairs is that the home goalkeeper is third in line at the moment.
Is that after officials? Is it?
No.
It's
just home, away, home goalkeeper, away goalkeeper, officials.
So officials are last currently?
Yeah.
Well, why don't they put more effort into making sure they don't clash with people then?
Because they're morons. They can't start the clashes between the teams. So.
That's an excellent point. Okay. The other thing that you've given the internet, or you've given the internet so much, and we're so grateful.
Happy to do it.
One of the other major things is the squad numbers blog.
Yeah. I think I'd probably put the squad numbers blog as part of the Museum of Jerseys Empire, really, because numbers are on jerseys. So.
Okay, well that...
Hopefully by the time anyone's listening to this, the museumofjerseys.com website will be actually there with the links to all the four sites. So.
Okay, well...
That's just an aside again.
I do hope you've purchased the museumofjerseys.com domain name. That's the main...
Well, I was going to go first with the Jerseys Museum, and then I was thinking you'd probably just get a lot of people visiting it looking for shit about Bergerac.
or Nazi memorabilia. Did the Nazis not make it to Jersey?
Oh, did they? I'm not sure.
I might be wrong about that. Apologies if I am. Apologies to everyone from Jez. Interesting, do you know what they called the shirts that Australian rules players wear?
Yeah, Guernseys.
Fantastic stuff.
They call them Guernseys or jumpers, which seems odd as well.
Okay, well, I like the Guernseys thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And the Irish, well, in the Irish language, Gaelic, it's Gansey. G-E-A-N-S-A-I. And then an accent over the I.
Is that an island off the coast of Ireland?
No, I presume it's just a Gaelicization of Guernsey. There's a link there, I'd imagine.
Okay. All right, well, that's more food for thought. Exactly. The point you've just made there is something I want to talk to you about. So you say, obviously, Museum of Jerseys, squad numbers and they are called shirt numbers for a reason. How does it affect the aesthetic for you? What number and name, firstly, appears on a shirt? Does it devalue or enhance the value of a shirt for you?
A little bit. I suppose it wouldn't be something that I take a huge interest in. It seems odd, I suppose. But yeah, if a number looks terrible, then obviously it does devalue it slightly. If a font just looks wrong. But I just like my fonts to be fairly simple and easily visible, because in my day job as a journalist, it's important to know which players are which when I'm covering a game. So just nice and solid, really, I suppose. Like the current Premier League font I like. It's just a bit more bulked up than its predecessor, which I was never a massive fan of. But in saying that, then, the best font ever is the one Ireland had at World Cup 90. But they were about 10 years behind all the other IDS countries. But that's just a complete nostalgia thing.
Yeah, okay, what about if a number is terrible in your mind? Does that devalue a shirt?
Yeah, slightly, like. Or if the colour is wrong. For me, really, the visibility is more important than the aesthetic. Like in the current Arsenal third kit, which isn't jinxed anymore now that they beat Olympiacos, the number is the whatever the shade of blue is. I think Capri Breeze is the official name put on it by Puma. The number on the back of the shirt is that colour, and the numbers on the shorts are gold, even though the shirt and the shorts are the same colour. So I'm not sure why they did that, really.
But that's fantastic, isn't it? Do you not like that?
Different numbers on the same coloured garments on the same kit?
Well, no. What they're actually doing is looking at the proportions of the colour on the shirt, because you've got the three bars at the bottom of the shirt, and you're actually increasing the gold because you've already increased the blue. So it's to balance it out again, I would have thought, which I didn't even know that was the case, but that's... that's brilliant.
I think we'll have to agree to differ on this one.
Well, wouldn't be the first time. What I'm also getting at is a shirt devalued for you if it has a stupid number on the back?
As in a stupid looking number or a stupidly high number?
Well, you assume that. High goes hand in hand with stupid, but is that the case? Like,
well, if you see someone wearing 74, he's clearly a knob.
I would disagree with that. What about 29?
Well, 29 is it's on the border, I think. I love Spanish league because they limit squads to 25. And they say to clubs, you can pick 25 players, number them 1 to 25. And the B team players can wear higher numbers if needs be, but they're never stupidly high. And they go a little bit further and they say, and the goalkeepers must be 1, 13 and 25. But 29 it's okay. I know you've an affinity with it. It's better than 39, which for some reason became a real craze among Arsenal strikers there for a while.
Yeah, this is Nicola Anelka wears did wear 39. He's probably retired now, but he's
Craig Bellamy also.
Craig Bellamy as well. Yeah, I'd forgotten about him. So
yeah,
and there is they even wore them in, I think, in international friendlies and maybe even qualifiers.
Yeah, Anelka would wear them in friendlies, but then had to wear between 1 and 23 for competitive games.
Ah, really? Okay. So World Cup qualifiers and that kind of thing. Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So he didn't wear 39 against... Did he play against Ireland in the playoff thing?
He scored the goal at Croke Park, and he... I think he wore number 8 or 9. Okay. I'll actually try and check there.
Maybe I saw half of his... half of his leg and just assumed he was wearing his usual 30.
Yeah, no, UEFA and FIFA in those ones, they let you wear whatever number you want between 1 and 23.
Okay.
Like the squad must be numbered 1 to 23 for every game, which is, it's a bit silly really, isn't it?
Elka
wore 9 in Croke, or he wore 9, in both games.
In both games.
In Croke Park, just to go back to the clashes, France wore all blue, even though there was no need to change the socks. But it just, they felt obviously it created a better look than blue, red.
For many years, France were wearing all blue, I think maybe as first choice. Even though they marketed the kits as blue, white, red.
Yeah. But that's Euro 2008, like, they wore all blue against Romania, who were in all yellow.
Mm.
They could have worn a normal kit. But...
Yeah. Yeah, they chose to wear all blue for a while. But as we've discussed, they seem to be going... we'll discuss that maybe another day. But it looks like for the Euros, they're going to be wearing blue, red. Which is If you're hosting
copying
the tournament,
the rugby team.
Is that the rugby team wears that?
They generally do, yeah.
Okay.
Not at the moment though, but if you're hosting the tournament, wear your proper kit.
Yeah, exactly. That you wear your historic traditional kit. I would have thought, but so that's crazy that they're going to wear blue shorts because it doesn't even look good. But apparently, that's a new push from maybe the manufacturers. We're not really sure, but so also in the Museum of Jerseys, you have CorkCityKits.com.
Yeah.
Now, that would sound like just a labour of love for yourself because you're a Cork City fan from the area and so on. But can you explain to us why it's so much more than that?
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Because when Cork City was set up in 1984, they had Adidas kits. Basically, if you can imagine, if you can remember the QPR kits from the mid-80s, where they had Adidas kits, hoop shirts with nice fat hoops with red in between the hoops, and Guinness sponsoring them. And Cork City's kit was pretty much identical, except that it was green instead of blue. And they even had Guinness sponsoring them. I think they were a new club. Cork had kind of a patchy history with league clubs, and they tended to come and go. So this was another incarnation. And I presume Guinness got on board because Guinness obviously is famous stout. And it's based in Dublin, but in Cork there's Murphy's and Beamish, and I think Guinness were just kind of, you know, just getting one up on their rivals by sponsoring the Cork team. And it just, it looked brilliant. And you see, the kits were actually made in Cork because there was a company, the Adidas' Irish distributor at the time was a company called Three Stripe International. And the fact that they were made locally, and the fact that one of the guys involved, a man by the name of Tony O'Sullivan, worked for Three Stripe. So basically it gave him a nice bit of leeway in terms of what to wear, that they were able to just create their own Adidas designs, really, or modify the ones that were out there. So it provides a great array of kits worn in the 13 years that they had Adidas before they switched to 15 years before they switched to Le Coq Sportif in 1999. An example is that City won the league in 1993, and they had, similar to what Liverpool had at the time, with the over-the-shoulder stripes that I previously described as obnoxious, it was a white shirt with green stripe, red stripe, green stripe, and green shorts with matching stripes coming up from the corner of the leg, white, green, white. But that kit had actually started out in August of 1991, with those stripes continuing all the way across the shirt and ending up down at the bottom left corner. Similar but different to Arsenal's away kit from 93-94. But the shirt was modified twice during the 91-92 season. First, there was a break in the stripes to allow the Guinness to be more visible, and then they were cut off before reaching the Guinness to create what looks very like that Liverpool kit, or what Marseille had when they won the Champions League. But if you are a complete nerd and compare them, you'll notice that the stripes are at a slightly different angle.
Yeah.
So that's one example. So go to my site, corkcitykits.com, and just marvel in all of the different variations, which I have lovingly recorded. And it did not affect my mental health one bit putting that together.
It is a fascinating website, and you do have that whole Adidas period. One of the most famous shirts is obviously the West Germany styled shirt.
It's the best ever, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
I know you put Germany as the best ever, but we know the truth.
Yeah. The problem with it is that it's derivative, and it would be difficult to make a derivative shirt class it as better than the Germany one. But no, yeah. I prefer the Germany one. I'll say that. But I did fight very, very hard to get the Cork City one into the 50 greatest football shirts ever. So
yeah, thanks. That's appreciated.
Well, yeah, but I mean, on the podcast, it was described as your choice, which you would, I don't think you would put it in there, would you? Would you put it in there?
In the top 50?
Yeah.
I suppose with Germany there, it is kind of just samey, but I do love it. It's probably my favourite. Well, I do love the Germany one as well, to be fair. Mm. So they're both up there. Joint first.
Joint first. That's not the official result.
Everyone gets a medal.
Yeah. So everyone should visit that website, as Dennis immodestly said.
Yeah. The Cork City shirt was worn in, was it House Martins, or was it Beautiful South?
I think it's Beautiful South, isn't it?
Yeah, a video. Guitarist or the drummer, or
maybe it is.
And it was very popular at the time. If any of the listeners remember the adverts in Shoot, where you'd see all these exotic European shirts, just basically a full page ad with shirts from all over the world, and Cork City featured regularly with that kit. And I think just that it looked so well, and with the Guinness sponsorship, just really set it off, and it sold brilliantly. And nowadays, Cork City play in a primarily green Nike team wear shirt with no imagination whatsoever, when they could just be redoing this one every few years and it would be great.
Yeah, the most recent seasons, on the website are a little bit disappointing, because they are just, or certainly some of them are just teamwear ranges, and there've been financial problems, and the club sort of went and maybe came back in some form, and the website probably explained that to a certain extent. It's not something.
Yeah, I know. You're being very diplomatic here now, because you know that if you say it's the same club, then I'll pull you up on Rangers. So you're like a politician, you don't want to leave yourself open.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. There are other kits. It's not just the Adidas years that is fascinating on that website. There are things that went on with Le Coq Sportif, with the Guinness kits. What actually happened with the Guinness socks? Did it ever happen, or it never?
It should have happened. It was just a complete lack of whatever. The kit was primarily cream with black trim. The shirt, very like Charlton's away kit in 98-99. This was the season later, and it was like that, slightly different. And black shorts and black socks. And it should seem obvious that the black socks would have cream tops, turnovers, so that it would look like a pint of Guinness. Great marketing, but never done. I think London Irish did do something like that. They had Guinness sponsoring them too. And even though their shirts were green, they wore black shorts and Guinness-style socks like that. But City never did it. Which is a great pity.
Yeah, it is when maybe it was conscious. Maybe it was that would be a step too far to actually do it. We've already put the kit in the colours of Guinness. It would be a step too far.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe
that
getting into Coventry Talbot dimensions.
Yeah. Oh, I suppose there is an element of that in there in the kit itself, in the kit even existing, but. But then Coventry Talbot didn't make the socks into the shape of a car, for example. But they really
that
should have done
quite the achievement.
Yeah, well, maybe they could have played around with some shin pad shapes to create that. I want to do that now. I might speak to some people. Yeah.
and then just after the Coq Sportif, City had O'Neill's. And the thing about the O'Neill's years was, just as in with their GAA offerings, just that there were so many different variations of kits. It's like that when O'Neill's would produce a new batch, that they wouldn't have had all the details of previous batch, so they'd just kind of wing it slightly, and there'd just be little differences, which again are kind of pleasing in a louche fashion.
Wasn't there an issue with the socks where some players had a different hoop to the socks?
Yeah, exactly. That's a prime example. That the socks were like the mid-90s Adidas with the three hoops. And they were white socks with a red hoop, a green hoop, and a red hoop. But some socks were the opposite, with two green hoops and one red one in the middle. And both styles would be worn in the same match.
Isn't there a picture of the players celebrating where you can see them when they're wearing different socks?
Yeah. I linked to it on the website.
Yeah, okay, so check that out. That is quite funny. Also, as well as being a Cork City fan, and this is pretty standard in Ireland, you have an English team that you support as well. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I suppose a lot of people in Ireland don't even have the local team. They just follow an English team.
And Celtic. Everyone in Ireland supports Celtic.
They used to anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that might be a fallacy. So Arsenal is your team in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Which we may have alluded to earlier. Arsenal are noted for their importance in terms of kits and so on for lots of different reasons, which. Often are contradictory, because they're a trendsetter whilst also being an anachronism in some ways. So let's start with Herbert Chapman. So give us a little bit of background to him.
Well, he was obviously the man who made Arsenal great. I'm actually reading the biography that Patrick Barkley wrote about him at the moment, but it's one of about seven books I'm reading, so I haven't made much headway. But yeah, he was regarded as a great thinker about the game and about how to gain advantages. And just basically, you know, just how to win. So like he came up, well, he didn't invent the WM formation, but he certainly perfected it, and that helped Arsenal to become successful in the 30s. And he was, floodlights were a thing that he tried to bring in. Short numbering, again, he wasn't the first to do it, but he tried to push it. But in his lifetime, it didn't really kind of come to pass. But and as well, what he was big on was players being able to see each other easily on the pitch. And in his own career, I think he wore white or yellow boots. I can't remember which, but it was just it was kind of related to that. And he wanted Arsenal to have hooped socks, and initially they couldn't find red and white hoop socks that wouldn't run in the wash, so they actually wore navy and white hoops, because he just felt that if a player was just looking up and needed to kind of get a pass off quickly, it would just aid the visibility if he looked up and saw a hooped sock. And then in 1932, yeah, he was friendly with a Daily Mail cartoonist by the name of Tom Webster, who coincidentally, like Arsenal's playmaker at the time was a guy called Alex James, who was very short. And to really emphasize this, Tom Webster used to draw him in his cartoons wearing massive shorts, and Alex James actually started wearing baggier shorts as a result of that. And he himself and Chapman were good friends, and Tom Webster had been playing golf with the Chelsea chairman, Claude Kirby, and Tom Webster showed up to this game of golf wearing a blue sleeveless sweater over a white polo shirt, or maybe it was a normal shirt at the time they wore, but Claude Kirby looked at his friend and said, "That would be a great kit for Chelsea," and he said it to the Chelsea manager, Dave Calderhead, and Dave Calderhead flat out refused. I don't know if a manager would get away with that nowadays. But Webster mentioned this to Herbert Chapman. They were at a hotel in Sheffield. I forget kind of why they were there. But Herbert Chapman kind of thought this would be a great look for the Arsenal. And I think he actually got Tom Webster to send out for red ink so that he could draw this concept on a napkin or whatever. And they got permission from the FA to have this as their kit, but it wasn't until March 1933 that it was actually worn for the first time. And what they did was Herbert Chapman ordered 10 red sleeveless sweaters, and the first few times that the look was seen, it was basically these sleeveless sweaters over the Arsenal white away shirts. So it was, you know, not conducive at all to playing football, you'd imagine. But eventually they started wearing proper shirts. But apparently when they would be washed, the sleeves would be taken off the shirts, so, and washed separately to prevent running, and then stitched back on after the wash.
Yeah, so that is a good clarification of that particular story, because there's so many different versions of that going around, and I think that one's pretty accurate. I've got it wrong many, many times, so thank you for sorting that one out.
You're welcome.
The fascinating thing you mentioned earlier was, because I read this the other day, that Herbert Chapman wore, there was a conversation on one of the groups that I'm involved with on Facebook, and someone said, who was the first player to wear white boots? And I think someone mentioned a Derby player, and obviously the answer comes back, it was Alan Ball, who started wearing them in the 70s or something. And then the comment came, it was Herbert Chapman when he was playing. And I looked at that, and I thought, my instant reaction
Spurs,
was...
Spurs, I think, ironically.
So
I suppose incidentally, really, because we overuse ironic. We kind of do an Alanis Morissette on it.
Maybe. Some of those things might have been ironic. I thought it was a joke when I read it. I thought it was a very, very funny joke. I actually thought, well, because he's known as a pioneer, you're taking it back, say, what are we talking there? So we're talking
the early
50 years earlier?
Yeah. So 70 years earlier, I'd say.
70
maybe
years.
60. Yeah.
Yeah, so say 60 years earlier, you're saying that, forget who you thought. And it's almost like... it's a bit like Marty McFly inventing rock and roll, or that guy in Goodnight Sweetheart, like writing a load of Beatles songs
in World War II.
What it feels like, and it's the suggestion that that's what he was doing way before anyone else was doing it, or Da Vinci inventing a helicopter. It's like such a crazy,
yeah. So you think Alan Ball went back in time and met Herbert Chapman?
No. But it is fascinating that he was such a pioneer throughout that period.
Yeah.
And earlier than I'd even thought. And such a big impact on kit design. Because, I mean, coloured boots have only really come about. People thought that it was John Barnes in the mid-90s, but you're talking like a century before, almost, that players had started, or one person in particular had started doing it. So it's he really is a pioneer like that.
I think they might have been yellow rather than white. That's just one.
Well, but it's still a contrast to whatever the norm was at the time.
By the way, I hold it as a badge of honour that I've never taken to a field wearing anything other than black boots.
Well, yeah, but that's good, but I don't know if you have a moral high ground on that basis.
I think I do, but I think I have a moral high ground on a lot of things.
The other thing, and moving on a little bit from Herbert Chapman, is the Arsenal sleeves rule. Are you able to explain that to us as well?
Yeah, it's one that I think a lot of people mistakenly attribute to Chapman, but obviously it wasn't him, because there was no such thing as short sleeve shirts in the 1930s. It was actually Bertie Mee who instigated it in the 60s. Because Arsenal have contrasting sleeves, it would affect the overall look, I think, to see players wearing a mix of long and short. So what they decided was that the captain would make his choice before a game, and whatever he picked, everyone else would go along with. And this thing came to prominence in 2013 when Matthew Flamini cut his sleeves off for a couple of games. And it drew some controversy. Controversy, as I say, but I think we know the word is, and like, by and large, it has been adhered to, except for the Flamini's exception, and a couple of other ones just brought about by necessity more than anything, really. But I think it's a nice tradition anyway, and it sets Arsenal apart in terms of the sartorial stakes, and it just looks nice to see everyone wearing the same, I think.
I'm not 100% sure that the reasons behind it are fantastic, and there's a tradition there and so on, but I'm not sure in practice it actually works out that way, because players still do something. Wasn't there a player who, sorry, you may have just said, was there a player that used to roll up his sleeves or something? Brian Talbot, so he had to get special dispensation from the captain to roll up his sleeves or something, did he? Is that right?
Yeah. But since him, there have been players who would roll up their sleeves and not. You know, I think he just was going over and above what was required, really.
Lee Dixon used to roll up his sleeves as
Lee
well.
Lee Dixon, I was going to say, yeah, he does. Or he did, sorry.
Yeah.
And in his first spell, Flamini often did it, so I don't know how he forgot or whatever when he came back.
Well, no, he didn't forget. He just decided, I don't care. For me, because there are those things, it does take away this uniform look that is supposed to be there. Now, I wonder whether we talk about 1% and so on, and sort of getting that 1% advantage. If you're saying to your players, you can't even wear the shirt that you want to wear, so you're wearing everything to your taste. And I don't know if the Arsenal players do it, but a lot of players cut off the foot of their socks and they wear those special knobbly foot bits instead.
Oh, yeah.
Do Arsenal players do that? Are they allowed to do that?
I'm not sure. I presume Bentner used to do it because at the World Cup, do you remember, he had to get a marker and colour in the white bit red, didn't he? So I presume he probably did it for Arsenal.
Yeah, on the tape. Yeah, so there are so many different preferences that players have. To say to them, you have to wear the type of shirt that we want you to wear, it seems a little bit outdated now, especially with the different combinations of base layer or no undershirt or long sleeve shirts,
yeah,
short sleeve shirt.
But are you not just kind of saying, okay, lads, you're a team, so you're all in this together, so you all look the same?
But does that give you the advantage, or does that take it away? It's the balance between...
Well, the Arsenal motto translates as victory through harmony, so harmony comes from everyone being the same.
Fabulous. That is...
I'm just spitballing here. Whatever.
Yeah, well, I think that sums it up perfectly. And indeed, that also could be the motto of this podcast. Perhaps
we've finally found harmony.
Yeah, it's incredible, yeah, that that's happened. There is a third element to the trinity of we said that the squad numbers was in there as well, so there's four. But the Museum of Genesis also includes internationalrugbyshirts.com. Is that,
yeah,
right? We'll talk about that on another day, because I do want to dedicate a podcast to rugby as a whole, because it is fantastic, the influence it's had on football.
Yeah.
But just finally, as it is Christmas Day, have you received anything kit related that you want to discuss, or is there, or you have you not got round to opening your presents yet?
No, I
okay.
haven't.
Yeah. Well, was there anything?
Yeah, so I still don't know. But a few days ago, I did tweet a picture of the full Arsenal 1990-91 kit that I found on eBay. Although it was, I think, the size of medium, so a medium from back then would probably be a very tight fit now. But all things be equal, that's something I would love. Just it's really impossible to convey the feelings that seeing that kit evokes, because it was my first year watching football, my first season. The 1990 World Cup was the first time, so I'd also love the full Ireland home and away kits, because that was the first jersey I actually got, the Ireland home, with a number 4 on the back in the proper number font with the three stripes, because Mick McCarthy was my favourite player because he was the captain. But so yeah, the full Ireland 1990 home and away kits I'd love, and the Arsenal 1990-91 kit. So just in case anyone wants to send me.
Yeah, so if that would be like a New Year's present or something. Or the Spanish approach, I think, is to give presents later. So
they maybe
hold out hope for those. They could be under your tree, you never know.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't really buy football shorts anymore, so it's more of a nostalgia thing. I do occasionally buy shorts just for when I go running, because I work out. just to get that in there.
Yeah. So the way...
How do you know someone has been to the gym?
Yeah. The way to... If you are interested in the very buff Dennis Hurley, then... He's married. He's mentioned he's married, but he's still putting himself out there. Just the way to his heart is the full Arsenal kit from 1990.
Yeah.
So just get him that. That.
How about you? Have you any Christmas wishes?
The other day, the other Saturday, the last Saturday, let's call it that, was actually my birthday, and I
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, belatedly. and I did actually receive, surprisingly, I've checked the labelling and we're not actually going to call it the Paris Saint-Germain base layer, but
okay.
the pink one with the black sleeves, yeah. So that is a moment in football history that I now own. And I will also maybe wear it when I'm working out. I will wear it to go running in or something.
And will you wear it under a black T-shirt that you have drilled holes in?
Yes, exactly that. That's exactly what I will do to show the full pink through. Yeah. So yeah. It is difficult to know what to wear it with now that I've got it. I'll have to work that out. I'm not going to buy a Paris Saint-Germain shirt, that's for sure. But this is an interesting thing that there is no Paris Saint-Germain branding on it whatsoever, not on the labels, not on the item. So they are creating these things specific to a club, and they've done it before with Manchester United and Barcelona, but they are looking at a wider market in terms of the marketing of it. So they're not trying to limit the sales to supporters of the club. That's an interesting element. But this is an argument I had with people because I said that Celtic should have hooped base layers. And the answer I got back from someone at Nike was no one wants to buy a hooped base layer. No one will want that.
And the answer is that you want
to. Well, the answer is that I want to buy it, of course. But the thinking behind that is that it's not a product that suits a purpose. It's a product that we need to sell. And clearly, it's not even a product that they just want to sell to fans of that club or let's say a pub team that happens to wear hoops on a Sunday. But it is an item that should be worn, a fitness item, let's say. So you can't be selling yourself short in that respect, I suppose. But
and would the body of that base there be hooped as well?
No, you wouldn't. You would have the hoops, and they would diminish as it goes further up the sleeve, in the same way that the black diminishes on this base layer that I've just received, and then the rest will be just plain white. You should always have the lighter colour as the main body of a base layer, so it doesn't show through a light shirt. Just a base layer tip there for you.
Yeah, and by the way, the Arsenal players are allowed to wear base layers when they wear long sleeves.
Yeah, and Ramsey, for example, rolls up the sleeve.
Pulls it up to halfway up his lower arm.
And if you're talking about uniformity, now that you've brought it up, if some players are wearing short sleeves and other players with long sleeves, all the players with short sleeves, if they wore a white base layer, it wouldn't be a problem. They'd look probably as good as they look now.
Yeah, but they'd be wearing short sleeves because they wouldn't want their lower part of their arms covered, so wearing a base layer with the short sleeves with the feet.
Not necessarily. The players wear a base layer is a second skin. A shirt isn't necessarily a second skin.
Yeah, perhaps. I wonder what Wayne Rooney wore last Saturday, because I haven't seen the pictures from that game yet. But earlier in the season, he was wearing long sleeves a bit, and he seems to have stopped before he got injured. So I'm wondering.
But this
what
is
the rationale was behind that.
Well, the reason why Rooney was wearing long sleeves is because it's the first season that he's been able to wear long sleeves for Manchester United for years, because there weren't any Nike long sleeve shirts produced for players.
Yeah, but what I mean is that before he got injured, he was back to wearing short sleeves with a base layer.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh. Okay. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question, but I think his time has passed anyway.
And by the way, I actually thought momentarily the other night, I just had a bit of a brain fart watching Leicester and Chelsea. Costa was wearing long sleeves, and just when I got a glance at him, I thought he was the captain, just because of the way that Chelsea design looks on a long sleeve shirt.
It's long sleeve hoops. Yeah, it's a crazy design because it's got the three stripes that run below those bands, so it looks like, it might even have a flap over the bottom part.
I think it does. I think that's par for the course with Adidas long sleeve shirts.
Yeah. Well, interesting. Okay. Well, this has been lots of fun, Dennis. Have you enjoyed it?
I have enjoyed it very much, Jay. Yes.
Excellent. We should maybe do this again one day. Maybe the rugby one. Maybe you're the man.
Yeah, I think I am.
You think you are? That's ideal. Okay, well, we've got that set in stone now that you are the man when it comes to a rugby podcast. Just to re-mention, museumofjerseys.com is where you can visit Dennis's whole network of sites. They're all on there. Or go directly to courtcitykits.com, internationalrugbyshirts.com. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Playthejersey.com and squadnumbers.wordpress.com.
There you go. That was the one I would have struggled with, but thank you for that. And of course, Dennis is on Twitter. Dennis_Hurley, correct?
Yeah, that's it.
There you go.
And also at Museum of Jerseys.
Museum of Jerseys, yeah, for that as well.
And at Squad NOS. I see, I don't know how to... Can you pronounce that as Squad Numbers and then spell it SQADNOS? Or do you say Squad Nose or Squad Nos?
Squad Nos.
Who knows?
Squad Nose. Yeah, it's a tricky one. You need
Squad Numbers was taken, so I just have to think of something.
No, it's perfection. You should get that sorted. You should get that consistent before the podcast.
Yeah, I really should.
Yeah. Okay. I have enjoyed this very, very much. As we always say, visit the website. We haven't talked about the website much at all today, but visit designfootball.com for the galleries of kits, crests, stadiums, boots, and there's a miscellaneous section as well where there's lots of other things. There are competitions.
And there's also
there.
Your blog, which you haven't really updated in a while, which could do with being updated.
What's that? What could be updated?
Your blog.
The blog on there. Well, by the time this is out there, you.
Well, sorry, I forgot to check it this morning.
Yes.
So that's why I haven't seen that.
Yeah, so everyone who checked this on Christmas morning will know that it's been updated. So you forgot to. That covers everything, I think. If you want to contact Design Football, it's designfootball.com on Facebook. It is Design Football on Twitter. My name is Jay, and you can contact me on Twitter as J29ers. That is, just try different combinations. If you don't know how to spell that, it's not that difficult. And that
the
is...
J stands for J, like Homer J Simpson.
No, it's J-A-Y.
Exactly, that was the joke.
Oh, okay.
Homer J Simpson. J is his middle name, J-A-Y.
No, it's not.
It is.
It's just the letter J, isn't it? Oh, that's
exactly.
The joke on The Simpsons, that his name is just J-A-Y.
The J stands for J.
Oh, I missed that episode. Thanks for ruining
my
podcast, Dennis.
I thought you of all people would know that.
Well, apologies to everyone who thought I would know about Simpsons episodes. Clearly I don't.
No, who thought that you'd know, like, because it's the name you've appropriated.
It's also kind of my name, but that I think we'll leave it there, Dennis.
Okay.
It's
reluctantly.
It's largely been a pleasure talking to you, Dennis. And we'll talk soon. I think maybe about rugby.
Okay, it's largely been a pleasure talking to you too.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.